This is ESPN Radio.
Hour 4 on Kenny and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Kenny, hit us up on the Dr. Pepper call-in line, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776, talking about the biggest surprises in the Week 9 slate of the NFL season. We're at the halfway point, 136 games played out of the 272 scheduled for 2021. And Mike, Week 9 was not without its surprises. We saw five division leaders go down, which got us to thinking a little bit, maybe we should try to play off of what some people would call an overreaction to the performances that we saw on Sunday. So we got a little segment coming up called Something or Nothing.
Yeah, we got to look at this one, Chris. Can we get some fun NFL music on this one? I feel like
I think we need something underneath here.
Sorry, Matt. Like, I didn't mean to put you on it like this, but it doesn't feel right to be naked out here. Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah, that feels good. Because, Chris, you're right. Seven division leaders entered this weekend in the NFL. Five of them ended up losing. The Bills, Raiders, Cowboys, Packers, and Rams. And so trying to kind of diagnose this out for the rest of the season, Chris. Looking at something or nothing for these teams here. Starting with Buffalo, Chris, they lose to Jacksonville. It's an absolute mutter of a game. This thing was gross to watch and felt even worse on the back end here. So was there anything you saw in this game from Buffalo's standpoint that worries you enough as a trend? Something or nothing, this loss to the Jags?
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it before, and we got to say it again. The Buffalo Bills are one-dimensional on the offensive side of the ball. Like, there is no relief for Josh Allen. He has to do everything. It's BYOB with Josh Allen in the running game, and it's Josh Allen dropping back to throw his team into games or to put points on the board. They don't have balance on that side, and when defenses recognize that, when there is no fear of the run game, those pass rushers up front can tee off, and that's exactly what we saw from the Jags. If you look at the first four games for the Buffalo Bills, they were able to average 145 yards on the ground. The last four games for the Buffalo Bills, just 94 yards on the ground, and the results show, and you saw the performance yesterday. So the Buffalo Bills stumbling a little bit down here the last three or four weeks of the season, and I think them not having balance on the offensive side is a big reason why. And so, yeah, it's hard for me to have confidence in them moving forward as a true contender without any semblance of a running game.
Yeah, Chris, I'm going to agree that it's something. Now, I still think they win the AFC East. I still think this is one of the best, if not the best, teams in the AFC right now. But they're facing similar problems with a lot less of the fanfare than, let's say, the Kansas City Chiefs are right now. Because it's been a similar formula in their losses. In the three losses that the Bills have had this season, they have faced their three highest rates of cover two, those two high safety looks that everyone's been talking about, giving Patrick Mahomes trouble. It's been the same formula against this Bills offense. And like the Chiefs, they're going to have to figure out an antidote, especially in the red zone, if they want that to get better as the season goes along. Chris, let's stick in the AFC here. The Las Vegas Raiders certainly have dealt with a lot of turmoil and a lot of difficulty off the field for this team so far this season. They dropped one this weekend as well against your New York Giants here. Is this something or nothing in the way you look at the Raiders?
I'm going to say it's nothing for the Raiders, and this is another one of those one-dimensional teams that we talk about in the AFC when it comes to the offensive side of the ball. But with the Raiders, it just hadn't seemed to matter. It's been the Derek Carr show, and the thing that caught up with the Raiders yesterday was the turnovers. Coming into that game, Derek Carr had only turned over the ball five times in the seven games. And then yesterday, he decided that he was going to turn the ball over three times, including a critical sack fumble at the end of the game when they had a possession in the red zone and throwing a pick six to Xavier McKinney. But this is a team that can move the ball up and down the field. They had 400 total yards of offense. That's the sixth time that they've done that this season. Not a lot of offenses can make that claim, so I'm not worried about the performance that I saw from the Raiders yesterday. I'm going to say this is nothing.
I agree with you, Chris, especially just what an outlier that performance was. The turnover bad luck for Derek Carr. Not worried about the Raiders, especially given the fact that that division right now, I know the Broncos look good this weekend. I don't trust that long term. The Chiefs still looked a little lost despite getting a win. And so I think the Raiders still in the driver's seat right now in that division going forward. It's Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canty, something or nothing for the five division leaders who lost this weekend. Let's head to Dallas for the Cowboys, Chris, because I think this is going to end up being a blip on the radar for the Cowboys here. This was one of those games. Tyron Smith out at left tackle. They're blitzed at a season low for them, 14% of dropbacks here. But that didn't stop it. Denver was able to get home early and often on Dak Prescott. It rattled everything about this offense. It's going to be contingent on health. I think their hopes this season, Super Bowl-wise, hinge on Tyron Smith, Zach Martin, and the core of that group being on the field. But ultimately, I think this is going to be an outlier for them in terms of performance. I can't count on that offense being that out of sync in critical junctures like fourth down and third down this season.
Yeah, I can't see that either. I mean, it's been a few weeks since Dak Prescott has had actual game reps, so I'm willing to chalk up that offensive performance to Russ, not to mention a key cog missing in Tyron Smith, their left tackle. And that defense, I mean, that defense just got overwhelmed yesterday. I think this is the Dallas Cowboys reading all of the press clippings and falling in love with what everybody's been saying about them and not realizing that you got to go out there and earn your wins in the National Football League. It felt like one of those spots where the Denver Broncos could pull off the upset, just because the Dallas Cowboys and the rest of the league probably thought the Broncos were punting on the season once they traded Von Miller. Unfortunately for the Cowboys, they found out that that's not the case, and now they're going to be in a dogfight to try to get that number one seed in the NFC. But in the big picture of things, I don't think this is significant for the Cowboys, so I'm going to say nothing.
All right, Chris, speaking of that one seed in the NFC, the Green Bay Packers – I think this one is something. They take a loss to the Kansas City Chiefs. We know Jordan Love was in for Aaron Rodgers, who can't be with the team and can't rejoin them until Saturday of this week when they're going to play the Seattle Seahawks, to keep that in mind. But, Chris, that race for the one seed is tight, and that was a winnable game for Green Bay. If Aaron Rodgers is on there, they're winning that going away, and instead – they allowed the Arizona Cardinals to get an improbable one. Tampa Bay sat idle this week. You talk about Dallas would have been a great opportunity to get one more up on them. And instead, Green Bay gave away what was going to be looked back, I think, as one of the easier chances for them to get a better hold on that one seed that we know is more important than ever.
Yeah, Aaron Rodgers not being available cost them an opportunity to get a road win in Arrowhead. Like, that's just what it is. But even with that being the case, the Green Bay Packers still had a chance to win. I mean, Mason Crosby in that first half, he misses a field goal, then he has one blocked. And I'm not sure if you want to blame it on the holder or you want to blame it on the kicker, but the special teams outfit ultimately ended up costing Green Bay, not to mention a muff punt by Amari Rodgers. So, like, there are a lot of situations where you saw that game, you know, took turns, took bounces in Kansas City's favor, and they were able to take care of their business. So, yeah, it ends up being a costly loss for the Green Bay Packers, but big picture, I don't know if it's going to matter all that much because they do have Aaron Rodgers coming back potentially this week against the Seattle Seahawks. So I'm going to say this is nothing. They're still in the driver's seat for their division. They're still going to be a team that's going to be in the playoffs.
All right, Chris, last one here. Sunday Night Football, the Los Angeles Rams get dump trucked by the Tennessee Titans. Something or nothing here on this one.
Yeah, I'm going to say this is something if for no other reason. Now the Rams are talking about looking up at the Arizona Cardinals and really being two games behind them when you consider the head-to-head tiebreaker. Like, this is a situation now where the Rams are scrambling. If the playoffs started today, you're talking about them going on the road to play the Dallas Cowboys. That's not exactly where you want to be if you're the L.A. Rams. So I think this is something because now all of a sudden you're chasing the Arizona Cardinals, a team that went on the road in the division with their backup quarterback and was able to find a way to win, a team that's the number one seed in the NFC, and they're going to have the first round bye if the playoffs started today. So, yeah, I think this is something for the Rams. I'm a little bit concerned about what this means in terms of big picture, just because I know the Arizona Cardinals are going to continue to stack wins. And so they do have another head-to-head matchup later in the season, so maybe the Rams can turn the tide. But that was a costly loss that they had last night in SoFi Stadium.
Yeah, that is certainly something there, as well as just how much pressure the Tennessee Titans were able to generate. I know they've been great, especially with the four-man rush this season. But for the Rams to come into this game only having given up 8 sacks on the season, that was tied for first in the NFL, to give up 5 in this game, that was a bit of a scary moment for them once they are not able to operate run first, once they're not able to just go and play action, pass everyone. When they had to straight drop back, you got more Lions-era Matt Stafford in a way that's going to be hard for other teams to replicate until we get to that postseason when all of a sudden the cream rises and you get more of that on a week-in, week-out basis. So that is something or nothing with the division losers from this weekend. Reminder, you can tune into ESPN Daily's podcast. They'll bring you a deep dive into a single story from one of ESPN's hundreds of reporters, presented by Supercuts. Download, subscribe, and review ESPN Daily, available wherever you enjoy your podcast. You can also download, subscribe, and review the Canty and Golic Jr. podcast wherever you get those. Coming up next, though, we're midway through the NFL season here. And we know this is about hardware. We will give you the midseason leaders for the MVP, Defensive Player of the Year, and more next here on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Kenny and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canty, all guests join us via the Goodyear Hotline. And Mike, because we're at the midpoint, I feel like it's time that we do the check-in, take stock of where we are when it comes to the superlatives and the awards that are going to be handed out at the end of the year. I'm talking about Defensive Player of the Year, Offensive Player of the Year, MVP, etc. And so for that, I got to kick it to my man, Devin the Dude, DK, and let's get it started, DK, with midpoint awards.
All right, let's start with the biggie, MVP, Chris. Who you got?
I got Lamar Jackson, man. I'm caping for Lamar Jackson. I don't think he's getting enough credit for what he's doing for that Baltimore Ravens team. Coming into this year, a big question was, could Lamar Jackson throw you back in the games? And I think he's answering that in an emphatic way. The Ravens, three times this season, have had double-digit deficits, three times have come out with wins, and this time in dramatic fashion in overtime at home against the Minnesota Vikings, being down 14 twice in that ball game, Lamar being able to find a way to win. He's top 10 in passing yards. He's top 6 in rushing yards. Go ahead and get a man his flowers. No player around the league is more valuable to his team's success than Lamar Jackson is to the Baltimore Ravens. So he's my midseason MVP.
Yeah, I don't know how there's any world where it's not Lamar Jackson right now. Although, old man Brady is just sitting there waiting in the wings, Chris.
Houseway, how?
In my best Jesse Pinkman voice, we can't keep letting him get away. He can't keep getting away with this, is how I think it could end up being right now. Just because Tampa's offense is potent, they're going to be in the mix at the end of the year, potentially for the one seed in the NFC, and we know how narrative-driven this stuff can be. I'd imagine his age is going to get more play down the stretch. But I'm with you. It's Lamar for me. 100%. Devin, what do we got?
Real quick, I just want to read a little updated stats because we have from Caesar Sportsbook the odds for MVP. The results might surprise you. Let me just run down. Tom Brady is now the betting favorite at plus 350.
Yep.
Josh Allen is still up there, plus 400. Kyler Murray is plus 500, followed by Matthew Stafford at plus 600. Dak Prescott, Aaron Rodgers, then Lamar Jackson.
That sounds like free money.
Yeah,
it does.
Yeah, it does.
I'm not one for looking down the road in futures, but Lamar Jackson might be worth it in that spot here. Kyler Murray's one we know anecdotally going to take a hit because Colt McCoy went out and got him a big win, but mm-hmm. I still think it's LJ era in this one.
All right, let's go to the next award, Offensive Player of the Year. Mike, who are you giving it to?
Honestly, we were talking about this earlier today here. I'd lean Cooper Kupp right now.
Interesting.
Cooper Kupp's been the best wide receiver in football this year. Him and Matthew Stafford had been dynamite since he got over there. I understand in the context of that offense, it's never going to blow you away with style points. We've talked about this in conversation with Odell Beckham Jr. about the way some of these offenses look, where they're not asking you all the time for one-on-one individual efforts. But, man, I think we've seen enough top-end production from Cooper Kupp to say this dude in one of the best offenses in the NFL has been the most important target for Matthew Stafford coming over there.
I hear you where you're going with Cooper Kupp. I'm not going to argue that because the production is there, although I will say I have a hard time being able to stomach or process calling him the best wide receiver in the NFL. Just because if we were drafting wide receivers, I don't know that he would go number one. That's neither here nor there. My vote for Offensive Player of the Year, and it's probably not a guy that a lot of people around the country know, but I'm going to go with Jonathan Taylor, running back from the Indianapolis Colts. He's leading the NFL in yards from scrimmage. He's fourth in total touchdowns with 9. And people need to pay attention to how the Colts are trying to win games. Their formula is not asking Carson Wentz to drop back and throw the ball 40, 45 times. It's handing the ball off to Jonathan Taylor, and when you're not handing it off to him, it's throwing it to him in the screen game and in the passing game. That dude is a home run hitter. He's a big play waiting to happen. Jonathan Taylor, get used to seeing him as one of the better all-purpose backs around the National Football League. Right now, through the midway point, he's my vote for Offensive Player of the Year.
Kenny Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio, midseason superlatives. Devie, what do we got now?
All right, Chris, I'll stick with you. You know this position well. You know the defense. Defensive player of the year. Who's your favorite right now?
I mean, we just saw him yesterday, didn't we? Like, we just saw him. It's got to be Myles Garrett, right? Is there anybody else that's at the top of the list? I mean, he's got 12 sacks on the season, and the guy is a game wrecker. Like, when offenses are game planning against the Cleveland Browns, they're circling number 95 and saying, we got to stop this dude. Matt Nagy and the Chicago Bears found that out the hard way. Joe Burrow and the Cincinnati Bengals found that out the hard way. I'm not sure how many other teams have to learn that lesson the hard way. Myles Garrett will wreck your game plan if you try to block him with just one offensive lineman. You need to have a chip over there. You need to have a tight end in location. Like, you've got to account for him with multiple people. That's just how dynamic this dude is. Coming into this year, he was my vote for Defensive Player of the Year, and there hasn't been anything that's happened that's made me change my mind. That's how good Myles Garrett is.
Yeah, no lifelines, no phone of friends. Myles Garrett, final answer. He's got more sacks on his own, or as many as the Kansas City Chiefs. He's got more than the Falcons as a team. He is an absolute unstoppable force. Nothing that big should move that well. It's terrifying, and I'm really glad I don't have to play football against him.
All right, Mike, let's do one more. Coach of the year, who are you giving it to?
This one is going to be really interesting, and I know the recency bias coming off of this weekend is going to be Cliff Kingsbury getting a lot of that love, what the Cardinals have turned into this season. But we mentioned his quarterback before. When you look at what the Baltimore Ravens have had to overcome this season on the injury front, it has been a mash unit for that team. And Lamar gets a ton of credit for it, but I have to say, his head coach, and we've seen the back and forth between those two, Chris looking on the field, some of the critical fourth down decisions, the coach and quarterback always seemingly in lockstep. I feel like John Harbaugh deserves Coach of the Year credit for the job he's done with this Baltimore team.
Listen, I love the pick. That's my former head coach. I think he's one of the best coaches in the National Football League. He's on the short list of about four or five guys that I would say are elite at the head coaching spot. But if I'm going to go with Coach of the Year, I'm actually going to pick a coach in the division with a rival team. That's right, guys. I'm going to do it. If nobody else will say it, I'll say it. Mike Tomlin.
Woo!
Wow. Mike Tomlin as NFL Coach of the Year. If the playoffs started today, the Steelers are in as a wild card, and nobody could have imagined saying that after the first month of the season. This is a team that started off 1-3, and nobody knew how to get the offense fixed. Turned out it doesn't matter if you fix the offense, because Mike Tomlin's specialty is on the defensive side of the ball, and I'll rope special teams in with that. But that's how good this team has been. They've won three straight games, and we're probably anticipating that being four straight with their game on Monday Night Football at home against the Bears. So Mike Tomlin, if he's somehow, some way able to find his way into the playoffs with this group, with this offense, with that quarterback and O-line, he deserves to be NFL Coach of the Year.
He deserves it if for nothing else, the soundbite he gave us after putting down the notion that he would be leaving for the USC job when asked about it in his press conference. That's a Hall of Fame soundbite, but at the very least, Coach of the Year consideration for Mike Tomlin. ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. If your pet is hurt in a car accident, Progressive pays up to $1,000 in vet expenses with free pet coverage. Visit progressive.com. And speaking of Mike Tomlin's Steelers team, coming up next, they're squaring off against the Chicago Bears on Monday Night Football. Justin Fields going to get a look at that Steelers defense. Why the biggest knock against Justin Fields, maybe the coach on his own sideline. Next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Kenny and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Kenny. And Mike, we got Matt Nagy back on the sidelines for the Chicago Bears as the head coach, as Justin Fields and Chicago go into Pittsburgh for the Monday night matchup against the Steelers. And I don't know if that's necessarily a good thing or a bad thing for Justin Fields that his head coach is back.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun. Everyone had a lot of fun at that expense the other weekend here. And listen, Matt Nagy's future is going to be decided by a lot of things here. But the record while he's away from Justin Fields isn't going to be the singular thing. But it was a reminder. when we stripped all that away, this conversation about the head coach and his future, they found some things the quarterback was able to do well. They moved the pocket. They went to a heavy dose of play action. They did a lot of the things that the outside world had been begging them to do ever since Justin Fields took over under center. That challenge gets a lot harder tonight, Chris, just because of the sheer amount of folks that the Bears are going to be missing when they take the field tonight at Heinz Field in Pittsburgh. I don't know what you can expect from a rookie quarterback walking into that environment as undermanned as they're going to be.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like it's going to be good. Not only are you talking about some of the injuries up front, but you also look at the defensive side of the ball. You're not going to have Khalil Mack for a second consecutive game. And then Eddie Jackson is listed as doubtful with a hamstring. So that's all of a sudden your defense is talking about taking a hit. Not that the Pittsburgh Steelers offense are world beaters, but essentially this is one of those areas of your team that you were going to lean on with a rookie quarterback in Justin Fields. Being able to have a strong defense that could keep the game close and not put too much pressure on your young signal caller, but it doesn't seem like you're going to have that benefit. So it feels like Justin Fields and that Bears offense are going to have to use some of the same things that they used last week against the 49ers, some of the concepts that he had success with. I do think getting David Montgomery back is going to help him. Yep. And Khalil Herbert being that 1-2 punch in the backfield. Make sure that this is one of those games that you're leaning on your run game and you're relying on your defense to try to keep this game close, knowing that the Pittsburgh Steelers don't have an explosive offense, and you'll see if you can make it a fourth quarter game. But I will say, being as shorthanded as the Bears are, it's not necessarily looking good for them going up against the Pittsburgh Steelers team that's won 3 in a row.
Yeah, Chicago's 6.5-point dogs tonight. They're 1-5 against the spread this season. And Chris, one of the things that's been interesting is we were just talking before the break trying to figure out how the Steelers have actually been winning football games this season. The one thing you can say is they bet big on identity at the running back position. And we heard comments from Ben Roethlisberger early in the season talking about Najee Harris needing to run behind his pads more, run big like Jerome Bettis, all these different things. Najee Harris has 3 straight games now with 100 scrimmage yards, and he is getting close to some serious production both as a rusher and as a passer this season in the NFL, Chris. When you look at what he's on the cusp of, he needs 21 rush yards and 27 receiving yards to be the first running back since Saquon Barkley in 2018 with 500 rushing yards and 300 receiving yards in his team's first 9 games of the season. So he's been as advertised for an offense that really didn't have an identity finishing last season.
No question about it. I mean, Najee Harris knew that he was going to have to shoulder a lot of the burden when it came to the Steelers' offense, just because you knew that Ben Roethlisberger was at the end of it. And from, you know, a concept standpoint, a philosophy standpoint, the Pittsburgh Steelers are limited what they can do offensively because they have an aging quarterback. You don't have a guy that's going to be capable of extending the downs like Ben Roethlisberger once could in the passing game. You don't have the element of the vertical passing game with Ben Roethlisberger being able to beat you over the top consistently. So those are things that are gone. What you do have are some dynamic weapons on the outside at receiver. So on some of the short and intermediate routes, they can do some special things if you get the balls in their hands. But also, when you start talking about, you know, some making the offense consistently go, it's going to have to be funneled through Najee Harris. We know that. So he's going to have to play a big role if this team is going to continue to stay on a roll. And based on what they've done offensively the last 3 games, the last 3 wins, over 100 yards in each of those games rushing after not having a 100-yard rushing performance in the first 4. So it's just one of those situations where the Steelers are starting to shape their identity of who they have to be on the offensive side of the ball, and Najee Harris has to be the focal point of that.
Najee Harris got to be the focal point of it because we know Ben Roethlisberger's limitations. He comes into this with a great record on Monday Night Football, 15-5 in his career with the Steelers in that regard at home in Heinz Field, but limited in what he can do at this point. It's about being the ultimate point guard for this team. And without the presence of Khalil Mack looming on the other side as a guy that can really make Ben uncomfortable, because we've seen he gets in trouble this year. Getting banged up, getting hit was really, I mean, we thought he was going to be knocked out early on in this season because he tried to act too much like the old Ben who used to be able to play through contact. That's not him, but without Khalil Mack on the other side, I feel a lot better about his chances of staying upright long enough to get the ball to these guys.
Well, yeah, and that's the other thing, too. I don't think he necessarily has to hold the ball long. I think it's better when the Pittsburgh Steelers get the ball out of his hands quickly into those playmakers. I mean, again, the short passing game being an extension of their run game, I think that's more of what their offense has to be. Ben just has to make sure that he's accurate with the football and he doesn't put the ball in harm's way when it comes to holding on to the ball too long in the pocket, but also throwing the ball over the middle of the field, making sure that it's not deflected or that he's not off target. So as long as the Steelers play a clean game in terms of turnovers and not giving the ball to the Chicago Bears, I have a hard time seeing a path to victory for Chicago in this matchup tonight.
Going to be a difficult one tonight for the rookie in Justin Fields. Matt Nagy back on the sideline for this team. And so if he plays poorly, get ready for the take machine to be firing on all cylinders come tomorrow morning. That Monday Night Football preview is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Insurance for motorcycles, boats, and RVs for protection on the road and on the water. See how much you could save in as little as 3 minutes at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com. Coming up next, a quarterback that Chris and I cannot make sense of, and an activity, a group of accomplished individuals that we can make even less sense of. Next on ESPN Radio.
Ian Golick Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golick Jr., Chris Canty, all guests joined us today on the Goodyear Hotline. And we got to give a shout out to the guests that came on today. Greg McElroy, ESPN college football analyst. Tyler Fulgham, ESPN sports betting analyst, getting your pockets right for Monday Night Football. And of course, Mina Kimes, co-host of NFL Live and co-host of the Mina Kimes podcast featuring Lenny. If you missed any of it, go to the Canty and Golick Jr. podcast, download, rate, subscribe. Gojo, right now is about that time in our show that we got to get to a little bit of three and out.
It is three and out here on Canty and Golick Jr., and it is brought to you by My Computer Career, training for a better life. And Chris, I can't believe we didn't get to this sooner. Because if you were going to go based off my timeline and strictly the NFL media's talking points this weekend, there was one story in pro sports. And that was Josh Allen beating the hell out of Josh Allen this weekend. The defensive end for the Jacksonville Jaguars, Josh Allen, the former Kentucky outside linebacker pass rusher, had 8 tackles, a sack, an interception, and a fumble recovery against the quarterback, Josh Allen. It was the first time that someone with the same name had sacked someone else of the same name in NFL history. And Chris, all of the low-hanging jokes were out there, and I enjoyed each and every one of them.
No, no question about it. And Josh Allen just flat out got after it. And the crazy part about it is, Gojo, not only is it the same name, but you're talking about these guys being drafted in the same spot in consecutive drafts. Josh Allen in 2018, 7th overall pick. Josh Allen in 2019, 7th overall pick. And both of those guys are phenomenal football players. But on Sunday, Josh Allen, the edge player, got the better of the quarterback. And we're not accustomed to being able to see that, especially when we're talking about somebody that's playing for the Jacksonville Jaguars under Urban Meyer. But credit to Josh Allen. Credit to that Jacksonville Jaguars defense. They showed up ready to play when it was clear that the Buffalo Bills and Josh Allen, the quarterback, did not. And they took full advantage of it. And like you mentioned earlier, got their first win on U.S. soil this season.
Chris, it's got to be tough being on the field, being in the same league, being constantly compared to a guy, same draft slot, same name, but has had markedly more success, got to the bag sooner than you. Like, that's a tough thing to swallow. So I can understand him taking that aggression out on the quarterback, Josh Allen. Not like I know anything about doing work next to someone with the same name as me with considerably more money and more hair.
Yeah, the only problem is you never feel able to find yourself when you do the Google search, too, so you never know what's going out there on the media and social media platforms. So that's got to be frustrating, too. But credit where credit is due, man. Josh Allen's a hell of a football player. He forced a fumble, he got a sack, and he got a pick, and he led his team in tackles. I mean, there really isn't much more that dude could do in order to help his team win. And it just so happens that yesterday it ended up being enough.
Canty and Golick Jr. here, continuing with three and out. Adam Schefter, normally reporting great news for us here at ESPN, tweeted a viral video of a youth football player, a 6-year-old, going full Derrick Henry with about 8 different stiff arms on one play. This, Chris, is a reminder that some people's better is just better from an early age here. Like, you don't got to wait long. There are scholarships, I'm sure, waiting in the drop box for this young man here. You got to get on it. Nick Saban's already, I'm sure, seen this video here and is going to be ready to do the right thing here because this kid's an absolute animal.
No question about it, man. I was sitting there watching it. The first thing I thought was, somebody needed to check this kid's birth certificate because he just looked bigger than all the other kids that he was out there playing against. But, I mean, It was like a Madden cheat code. He was stiff-arming every kid that he ran into on the defense, and he went all the way and made it a house call. Like, the kid was super impressive. It's unbelievable when you see kids like that, and you can tell as soon as you set foot on the football field and you're watching them play, like, that kid is just different than all the other kids. And in the case of the video that Shefty tweeted out, man, that kid was a man amongst children, although he was a child himself. It was just unbelievable to watch the performance.
Yeah, it was. It was like in video games where I just hit the stiff arm button over and over. Usually it doesn't work. For this kid, it worked each and every time here. So we wish him well. I look forward to calling his name in like the 2040 NFL draft. Canty and Golic Jr., Mike Golic Jr., and Chris Canty. We talked to Mina Kimes earlier, like you mentioned, our resident Seahawks fan. What we didn't get to ask her about was yet another cringeworthy video from Russell Wilson. Oh. Now, I know he is a guy that's really endearing himself to you, Chris. So, scale of 1 to full-blown Russell Wilson, hey, Seattle, we got a deal, video in bed with Sierra. Where does the secession theme video about Russ's return from his middle finger injury rank for you?
I'm going to say this is about an 8.
Ooh,
like,
okay.
the Seattle, we got a deal in bed with CC, like, that was as bad as it gets for Russ. This came close. I don't think it got to that level just because I feel like there's a little anticipation when it comes to the Seahawks in the 12s getting their quarterback back, and he put out a little teaser after he put out the picture of him having the pin removed last week saying the pin is out, time to win. Corny, yes, but it didn't necessarily get to the video level. I think the video kicked it up a notch. It wasn't cool, like, to have the succession theme. I just feel like he was putting a little too much on it. And these are the moments where I just wish Sierra would try to rein Russ in a little bit. Like, it felt like he said this was a good idea and she co-signed on it, knowing that she probably shouldn't have backed him on this one, because it just ends up being a terrible look for Russ. It wasn't cool at all. It wasn't fun. It just actually reminded everybody how much of a cornball Russell Wilson really is. I love Russ. No disrespect, because he's a heck of a football player. But when it comes to the cool factor, not so much.
Chris, I feel like you just went full like Eddie, like Charlie Murphy's True Hollywood Stories there with no disrespect, but Russ is a cornball. I love the guy, but he's wild corny.
Where's the lie, Mike? Where's the lie? Help me out with that one. Where's the lie?
Yeah, I remember grinding my feet on Eddie Murphy's couch. Now, I will say, with the succession theme, it makes me wonder, like, which character does Russell Wilson think he is? Like, looking at the Seahawks organization, does that make Pete Carroll Logan Roy, and thus make Russ Kendall trying to take this thing over? Devin, where are we at?
He's
here?
Greg. He's so awkward that I think he's Greg.
Yes, that's exactly
he's cousin
who he
Greg.
Is.
I was going to say he
yes,
was Tom.
Dev, he is Greg, the character that nobody likes in the show. That's the one that you don't want to be. Greg.
I love Greg.
1,000%.
I do love Greg. That
no,
being
how
said.
Can you love Greg? Greg is terrible.
Because he's so weird. Like, hear me out on this one. I feel like Tom might be a better comp here. Has a wife who kind of dictates things in here. Shiv walks all over him and is clearly the power player in that relationship.
Okay.
I feel like there's some parallels there, but Greg the Egg is a pretty good one. I'm not going to lie to you guys.
Nobody likes Greg. I don't understand where you guys are coming from, how you could have such an affinity for him. Makes no sense to me.
He's so innocent in this game.
Right.
You know, he just doesn't understand what he's getting himself into, and he's, you know, he's still a power player.
Yeah, Greg tries to both sides this thing, and I don't think this is necessarily one of those things where Russell Wilson is trying to both sides anything. He's trying to come off like he's cool, and he's not. But he is a heck of a football player, so everybody gives him a pass on it, and that's okay. But let's not call a video cool. It's certainly not succession themed, even though it had the music. It just made no sense to me. We didn't need to have this, Russ. Who was asking for this video? No one. No one was asking for it. Why'd you put it out?
Because that's all he knows how to do. Russell Wilson's love language is very clearly awkward social content. Speaking of awkward social content, Jason Fitz co-hosts a radio show called Spain and Fitz. They're up next on ESPN Radio.